Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back. My name is Kit.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Dreaming Things. We occasionally, every week that is, talk about movies mandated by our patrons individually. And this one comes in from Bryce. That's what we're doing today. It is Chopper from 2000, an Australian crime thriller biopic, both, I think.
Possibly.
Directed by Andrew Dominik, the guy who directed the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford.
Most recently, he did Blonde.
He did. We don't want to talk about Blonde.
Yeah, well, I'm just putting man's work out on display, okay? Blonde, he also did Killing Them Softly.
Blonde is diabolically bad, but the assassination of Jesse James is incredible. I'd never seen Chopper. Steve, had you?
I have never even heard of Chopper.
I didn't know that Eric Bana knew Ball like this. You know, I had never seen the man in the way that you see him in Chopper. I'm curious to know what you thought of the movie Chopper.
This was a movie I'd never even heard of before. Didn't know what it was about until, like, I didn't even really honestly look it up until like 2 weeks ago when you're like, do you know Eric Bana's in Chopper? I was like, oh, no shit.
Yeah, I didn't know.
To me, because I'm such a huge Star Wars nerd, I just kept thinking of the little astromech droid named Chopper who has the most kill count in all of Star Wars, I think, for an individual character. He's a little psychopath. If you think R2-D2's bad, wait till you see Chopper. Huh. But this movie, I've always been a huge fan of Eric Bana. I like him a lot. He doesn't pop up in a lot of movies anymore, I feel like. I feel like it's been a long time since I've seen Eric Bana in a thing. So it was good to see. I was excited to see a movie with him in it. I just appreciate his acting a lot. And then I find out it's about this, like, Australian criminal that has done all this nasty business, but he's kind of got a cult of personality about him. He's definitely a kooky, entertaining kind of cult of personality figure. And so I sitting down and watching this for the first time, I was reminded, I remember this type of look, this early 2000s low budget indie film look where it's like everything's teal and super contrasty. And it just brought me back. Like, I'm not saying that as a criticism of the movie. It was just like, man, I definitely know exactly when this movie was made. And I love that about it. And I think, like I said, Eric Bana is a great actor. He plays his character very funny and scary. Like, he's honestly a horrifying figure. And the most interesting thing about this movie is you are meant to go through this entire story through the eyes of the most unreliable of unreliable narrators, a character that, you know, for most of the movie, I was curious, like, am I supposed to be afraid of this guy? Am I supposed to think he's funny? Am I supposed to sympathize with him? Am I supposed to condemn him? And I think the movie kind of allows you to have that struggle with how you're supposed to react to Chopper, but never actually tells you exactly what you're supposed to feel. It's just like, this is this really complex and heinous and dorky character, and you make up your own decisions about how you feel about him. It's an interesting take on this style of movie. And so I think I enjoyed the movie a lot more than I thought I would when I first saw the poster of, you know, Eric Bana with his shirt off and his tattoos. I was like, oh, what's this going to be? But I ended up, I enjoyed it.
So. I'm with you, man. I had a great time with this movie. I do like everything that Andrew Dominik has done.
Even
to
Blonde?
Some extent, except for Blonde, which I can't stress enough that I think is just diabolically bad. I have a moral issue with Blonde, but again, I didn't know that Eric Bana had this in him. And I haven't seen him in a long time. I often confuse him in my mind with Clive Owen because they were both like big around the same time.
They kind of have similar looks.
And this was way before. Well, not really way. This is right before he became the Hulk.
Yeah.
Right.
I think Aang Ling's Hulk was 2003.
Oh, 2003. That's a guess. You owe me $100 if I'm right.
I'm going to look it up. The Hulk.
I got a hundo on 03.
The Hulk. 03, you're right. Yeah.
Wow! $100 richer! That's not how bets work. But I have an affinity for prison movies as well. I don't know why. Have you ever seen Blood In, Blood Out?
I have not.
No, probably don't. But I have the DVD if you want it. Something about this. This is going to sound really bad, but it reminds me of my dad. my dad wore that handlebar mustache for most of my childhood. And he was covered in these prison tats. And prison tats are fascinating because, like, there's obviously no tattoo parlor in there, but they get them. So you're like, I wonder how, you know?
Yeah.
What they do, they're crafty individuals. That's what you don't know about most of the world's criminals. And they adapt and survive. It's like the prison is like post-apocalyptic television. You know, you get to see them just improvise, adapt, and overcome. So they make these tattoo guns out of like a CD player motor and a guitar string, and they can even make their own ink with like ashes and stuff. Mm-hmm. But so the needle, quote unquote, is just a guitar string. So it's extra painful because it's not meant for stabbing skin and stuff, you know? I just think that's and they're not allowed to get tattoos, you know, and they can get severely infected because prisons are dirty places. So just the act of getting them is so like crafty and painful and dangerous and can be punished. It makes them more special, you know?
Yeah. I earned this one.
So my dad had all those like amateur blue prison tats, and he led a life like this long before I was born. He was 36 when I was born. So, you know, he was like a cocaine dealer and, you know, got stabbed in Mexico and ran across the country hustling doing what was called red card or three card Monty. Have I ever explained this?
I don't think you've said the specific part of your dad's past.
So the game is like two black aces and a red ace. And it's a hustle, you know? So they would go to truck stops and like you show the three cards, you know, you show the red ace. You've probably seen it on TV shows with balls and cups.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you can guess which cup has the ball under it, you get, you know, you bet $100, I'll give you 200. And they would do that with the red cards. If you can find the red ace, you know, so the idea is that the dealer is so clever and shifty with the cards, he can make you think it's over here. But what he's actually doing is sleight of hand, and like none of them are red, most likely type stuff, you know? So they would go as a group across the country, hustling these truckers at truck stops for hundreds and thousands of dollars and go from place to place and live like that. And my dad's job was to beat them up if they realized they were being hustled, that there was no red card, you know? Okay. So my dad was like kind of a psychopath at an early age, a very kind man for the most part when I was a little boy. Like I was loved and hugged and kissed and had no idea. I thought he was just a construction worker, you know? So this is all before I was born, but he would tell me this when I got into my teen years and his history of growing up in Price Hill, Cincinnati, and then traveling the country doing this kind of stuff. And I saw the tattoos and I just started to gather, you know, I've told this story, I think, but he joined the military during Vietnam, ended up breaking his sergeant's jaw at 17 years old. And instead of going to which he probably lucked out, but instead of going to Nam, he went to military prison in Leavenworth. And this was in 1969. So nice. Never a good time to be in prison, but horrible time, particularly to be in prison. And at 17, you know.
Yeah.
And then when he got out of prison at 19 and went home, the first week that he was out, he got in a car crash while he was driving because he was in prison until he was 19. So he wasn't a very good driver.
Right.
And his sister and his best friend died in that wreck, right? And they went through a house. So he was just like set up for failure from every degree, right? And was a very violent, angry man. But he would always like shadow box me and like rip telephone books in half. But he was kind of like this, like always on edge. Like when I was watching Chopper in this movie, I found the character to be fascinating because he's actually quite a sensitive man.
Yeah.
He's just psychopathic and on edge and
super kinda, paranoid.
Kind of confused. Yeah. Yeah. Like I can remember, and my dad's been dead for a long time, so I don't think telling these things is anything wrong to do. But my dad, a couple memories of my dad I have are him driving and somebody behind him flipping him off at a stop sign. And him throwing the truck in reverse and just ramming the car behind us.
Oh, God.
And the guy's like all bloody and hit the dashboard and my dad just taken off. And then I can remember somebody at a grocery store in the parking lot asking my dad for change and scaring him. Because, it was just he was drug addled and homeless and just said.
The person asking for change?
Correct.
Okay.
And hey, man, kind of scared him. And my dad had spent so much time in prison. He turned around and just punched him.
And like instinctually?
Yeah. Like without, not because he was asking for change, but because he had frightened him.
Yeah.
And he just went, ugh, and like right hooked him and knocked him over. And I was like seven, I'm like, huh? And it's sad now because I'm like an adult and I understand how tortured my dad was and how abused he was. But like, anyway, I'm watching this movie thinking, I kind of understand this guy more than I should, because my dad was just like hair trigger, always on edge, and that it's actually quite painful. And then when you meet Chopper's dad in this movie, you're like, oh, okay, his dad sucks, and my dad's mom sucked. He did his best with me. He was very verbally abusive. But I think compared to his own mother who beat him with canned goods, he was like, I'm fucking doing great,
Right.
I scream at you and call you a little bitch all the time. Like I haven't hit you with a single canned good. And so it's like, what are you whining about? That's what I was thinking. So I had a lot more sympathy for this character than I probably should have, or maybe that's not fair to say, but the biggest jump scare for me was at the end of this movie when it said, Mark Brandon Reed is one of the most successful authors in Australia's history. And I was like, fucking what? Because It doesn't talk about that at all.
Well, I mean, that's why he's being interviewed. The whole setup of him being interviewed by the reporter in prison is because he wrote the book.
That's fair.
But the thing that kind of freaked me out was like, this movie came out in 2000, but the version of the movie I watched on Prime, I think is how I saw this. Uh-huh. It does the whole like, to this day, is Mark Reed?
Mark Brandon Reed.
Mark Brandon Reed, aka Chopper, is Australia's most, prolific author up to this date. Also, he died in 2013. And I was like, is there a director's cut? Because this movie came out in 2000. Yeah, that added timeline or that time tag threw me for a complete loop. Like, wait a minute, what's going on? How did they know this?
Yeah, he died at age 58, October 9th in 2013. I think this sentence is hilarious. So Reed wrote a series of semi-autobiographical fictional crime novels and children's books.
And children's books, yes. After watching this movie and then you see that line written down, you're like, what were those about?
Yeah.
Let me actually look for Mark Brandon Reed children's book.
Yeah.
I want to see what it is. Oh my gosh, no way.
Well, do you know the character?
No fucking way.
Well, first, he's named. Do you know why he's named Chopper? It's the dog in the Yakky Doodle cartoon is why he's named Chopper. It's after that.
Really?
Yeah. It's a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. But anyway, go on.
So I looked up Mark Brandon Reed children's novel, and this is the first thing that came up. Hooky the Cripple, the grim tale of a hunchback who triumphs. And the cover of the novel is just like the most.
It's just a bloody knife.
It's just a bloody knife. Like, This can't be a children's novel.
No way.
Hooky the Cripple is a dark and violent tale of our time. Set in the 16th century Italy, it tells the story of a young hunchback who, persecuted beyond endurance, fights back against his tormentor and then must face the grim consequences.
So that doesn't sound like a children's novel, Steve. I don't know if that's one of his children's books.
Oh, man. I
maybe in Australia that passes for a children's book, you know?
Give me a kids. I want you to turn off Bluey. You're gonna listen to some real shit. this is how your mum and dad grew up.
Hooky the Cripple.
Wait, is this another not one? Condemned sorry,
by just, Streaming Things podcast, by the way. That is just the name of the book.
Oh, sorry. This is an adults only fairy tale by Mark Brandon Chopper Reed. It's called The Adventures of Rumsley Rumsfeld.
See.
But and there's the cover of that if you want to.
Oh, panties around an ankle.
Yeah.
The art's not great. I'm not going to lie.
No, it's not.
Oh, you know, that's a guy.
Yeah, that's that dude.
Yeah.
What'd you think that was?
Well, no. There's a guy between the legs.
Oh, there is a guy between the legs. Oh, okay.
He's doing the business over there on the bench.
Interesting.
While the other guys. Reed spent only 13 months outside of prison between the ages of 20 and 38, by the way.
Man, I hope he made those months count.
I don't think he did. Sounds like he was doing crimes. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the events that you see in the movie seem to be pretty true from what I'm reading here as far as his the events going on, his actual life story. Reed was an author of crime novels. That makes sense. Selling more than 500,000 copies of his works. His first book, Chopper from the Inside, was collected from letters he sent while incarcerated in Melbourne's Pentridge Prison and published in 1991. Tales and anecdotes of his criminal and prison exploits. Further biographical releases followed in a similar vein. With the advent of Chopper 5, Pulp Faction.
Faction.
Reed began writing fictional tales based on his experience of criminal life. Attempts were made to ban a children's book written by Reed titled Hooky the Cripple.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, no.
That's a children's book.
In later Holy years, shit. He made recordings of voice narratives, which also sold well. That's insane.
Okay, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't, you know, I understand people are like, oh, we don't want to condone criminal activity and stuff, but I would fucking buy an audio tape of Mark Brandon Reed talking about his own stories.
I want to read.
Because have you listened to like actual audio of the guy? Eric Bana does a really bang up job of, it's basically that. Just imagine a slightly older version of that dude. It's like, what are you doing here? Like I saw the original, the I don't know if it's the exact news story that they're covering in the movie, but I saw a news video of him and he does the similar like, oh, we're out in the woods. You think if I shot you, all these woolies would come out and get you? Like, it's just the most Australian bloke.
I wish ever. My dad had written books. This guy wrote 11 books. Well, 13 really, just about himself.
Yeah.
It was Chopper from the Inside. Chopper 2, Hits and Memories. Chopper 3, How to Shoot Friends and Influence People. I'm sorry, I read that for the first time out loud. Chopper 4, For the Term of His Unnatural Life. Chopper 5, Pulp Faction. Chopper 6, No Tears for a Tough Guy. 7, The Singing Detective. The Sicilian Defense. The Final Cut. And then it goes to Chopper 10 and a half, The Popcorn Gangster. And then Hooky the Cripple. He took a break.
he tried something new.
The Adventures of Rumsley Rumsfeld. And was that the one that you saw there?
Yeah.
And then Chopper 11, Last Man Standing, from X-Con to Icon. And then Mark Chopper Reed, One Thing Led to Another. And then Mark Chopper Reed, Road to Nowhere, which he wrote 2 years before his death.
Wow.
So
I think that speaks to why he's such a fascinating figure, because he can't tell if he's obviously a bullshitter, right?
So, yeah, and very much a narcissist, apparently.
Yes, a narcissist, very much a bullshitter. You can't take what he's saying to be fact at all. But he is charismatic and genuinely kind of funny. And you
the
can't
movie,
help
the but, movie's occasionally funny, which is kind of off-putting because of...
Like why am I laughing at this?
And it's the kind of humor that I specifically love, like kind of... What We Do in the Shadows, Monty Python type of thing, where they're just like taking it to the extreme. They're still prattling on. And it's like, oh, now it's funny because you guys are just arguing about this after stabbing the guy kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like there's a scene. If you go on Prime and you look up this video or this movie, you know how like sometimes when you have a movie selected, it'll start playing either a trailer or a scene from the movie. Mm-hmm. Like just on the UI page. So I loaded this movie up And I went to go, I think, start making dinner before I actually sat down and watched it. And the scene that plays on Prime is one of the earlier scenes when he walks into H Block and the one guy who has like motor oil in his hair is like, you stay on that side of the room and yeah. I'm going to be over here. And then he immediately goes to his buddy and goes, what's he done with his hair?
Yeah.
And they just talk about how he's developed a bit of a complex about like putting shoe polish in his hair. So he yeah. looks like he has jet black hair. And that was the first thing I'd ever seen about this movie other than the poster. And I immediately was like, well, this looks like it's going to be fucking hilarious. I can't wait.
Yeah.
And it is funny, but it's like dark and like, honestly, there's a couple scenes where you're like, I don't feel comfortable with what's happening.
Bit with his girlfriend.
Yeah, it's
but then weird. Also when he goes to Lofton's apartment later and he's got like his 8-month pregnant girlfriend and the kids and all that stuff. And I
uncomfortable.
Was not a fan of all that because I grew up kind of that way. Not in Australia, but like, you know, all my cousins and stuff would be super pregnant, chain smoking and high and, you know. Just icky memories, not good times.
It's a movie that's not afraid to be icky. Mm-hmm. And I think that's to its credit because it's being as real as it can be.
Yeah, Andrew's brutal to and you can see that to full and terrible effect with Blonde. And the problem with Blonde is that it's so gross to do that to Marilyn Monroe when you could have made the same point. And I know it's based on a book that people also hate, a fictionalized telling of Marilyn Monroe's life. But you could have made an effective story about abuse that would have been uncomfortable as fuck, but not predatory in itself.
Yeah.
By being based on a fictional person, you know? Mm-hmm. But by just saying, this is Marilyn Monroe, when it's a fictional version of her life, it's a woman who was never let go by the media and manipulated and preyed upon by people who wanted to make money off of her while she was alive. Mm-hmm. Like to use her for that story in particular was just, it's too gross to even stomach when you're watching it. Right. So,
right.
But he also does, you know, his filmmaking style is on the other side of that. I think that the assassination of Jesse James is a masterpiece. It's shot by Roger Deakins. It's by the coward Robert Ford. It's so good. It's so good.
So good.
I was excited to watch Chopper and I was not let down. So thank you, Bryce. It opens up with Chopper watching his own interview on TV in prison. We're kind of slammed in media res into the story. Don't know really what's going on. It goes back in time. And this is when we see the scene with Keithy and the shoe polish. He's in prison earlier on, right?
Did you get a kick out of the Don't Fence Me In song that was playing?
A little bit. Yeah. I always appreciate the cheekiness.
Well, we actually just listened to that song was in Fallout.
That's
now,
true.
Obviously, the Bing Crosby and Andrew's sister version is what we listened to in Fallout, but it was just kind of funny, like, wow, this song just has crept into my life twice in a week.
Yeah, what are the randomly. Odds?
Yeah.
It'd be funny if it was the Hot Coffee song.
That's for a different scene.
Reed, after some banter back and forth, Reed, and I took as good a notes as I could, but this is an interesting movie to kind of do our style with. This scene is in the 70s. Reed stabs the fuck out of Keithy. And then like regrets it, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing that they do with this movie a lot is like when Chopper is at his most violent, he'll kind of explode randomly. And it's always randomly and out of nowhere when he just like would just walk up to Keithy and just stab his face a bunch. And then he immediately is like, oh man, I'm sorry. Oh shit, I gone done it again.
Why'd you make me do that?
You want a ciggy? I'm so sorry, man.
Yeah, the dude just like throws the cigarette, like, stop, I'm dying.
You're a fucking idiot who hurts people for reputation.
Yeah, and that's the problem is that he's actually severely mentally ill is what I kept thinking, you know? I'll never forget when my dad was telling me about that, the time he hit his sergeant. The way that went down, and I've told this story on air before, but, you know, he's 17 years old. He's swabbing the poop deck or whatever army guys do. He's mopping late at night, and he fell asleep. And he's like this thug from Price Hill who's dropped out of school, been on his own since he was 15. And the sergeant came up and put his boot on his face and kicked it, like pushed it with his foot to wake him up. And my dad's like, comes from a neighborhood where you can't let that slide. You know, it's just, it was instinct. So he just snapped awake, blacked out, grabbed the ringer, which back then was metal, and swung, you know? And then but the way he told me this story when he was in his 50s and I was like almost 20 is that he was like, he immediately saw what he did. And he's like, and I just like tried to put his face back together. Like, you know, I just started crying like, no. And like, it still makes me tear up thinking about it. Like, it's just, your whole life in an instant, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you're like, clearly need to be on medicine and through and in lots of therapy. I'm not excusing Chopper or what, I don't even know the guy, but just from what I'm seeing, I immediately was like, I get that, yeah. You know? And since
I feel like that's way more relatable and real than just like, I just stabbed your face in, mate. I'm evil. Ha ha.
Exactly. Yeah. And we all do that to some, I know I do. I got that from my dad, but instead of being violent, cause I was protected and loved, I'll just say stuff that I regret.
Yeah.
Like, and as soon as it comes out of my mouth, I realize the harm that I've caused. And right. Like, that was funny, but that was not necessary. You know, he's a good dog. Take it back or, you know, whatever.
you think I'm really a good dog.
but yeah, that's what I was thinking of during this scene. And also, the guards are very slow in this prison. I don't know if this is Australia's fault or if this is the 70s fault. What's happening
down there in Australia where they're just like, oh, we sent a whole island to the island of prisoners. I guess we can't monitor ourselves.
They just lock them in this room and leave them unattended. And even when they're calling for guards, and it takes them a good 4 or 5 minutes to come in. The dude probably could have lived if he'd have got some immediate medical attention.
Yeah. Keithy's gone and had an accident. Yeah. What was the thing? Like Keithy's gone and had some sort of accident or something.
I forget the word that they used, but it was funny because they said it twice.
Yeah. And you also see, because Chopper goes from being like, oh man, I'm so sorry. Fuck. But by the time the cops show up, he's like, whinge, you're fine.
All you do is whine about your stabbed face. it's all you do.
And then it also serves to show how chummy that he is with other people. Like, even though he's this, you know, crazy guy that stabs people in the faces out of nowhere, he has this like warm repartee with all of the prison guards. We're like the one, oh, you've been putting in overtime, eh?
Yeah, he's a charming guy.
Yeah.
To some point, but it's also very stressful to be around him because he's so unpredictable. And yeah. That's why Lofton kind of hates him, right? So they're worried about the reprisal of the Dockies because he was in real life in a gang in there called the Overcoat Gang. So, you know, there's a lot of gangs violence going on in there. His plan, he's telling Jimmy and Blue his big plan about how they're going to break out at night and just to protect themselves, paralyze every single person in the prison.
Right.
And then go back to their cells. That way they don't have to worry about it.
It's just as he's explaining the plan, as the audience, you're kind of like, what the fuck is this guy on about? Because it's like, we'll go into the armory, we'll take out the guards, and then we'll open up the cell one at a time and ice pick everyone's back and make everyone paraplegics in the whole prison. Mm-hmm. And then we'll take somebody hostage, we'll call the governor. Like, he has this whole, in no way would this plan ever fucking work. Because it's just too elaborate and specific in a weird way. And his two buddies, Bluey and what's the other guy's name? Lofton. Jimmy. Who the fuck is Jimmy? You can see them looking at him like, oh my God, we backed the wrong horse in this person. Yeah. We should have joined the Dockies.
They're just terrified in this instance. And so now he's got a price on his head. And that scene, I'll probably never forget it. The scene where Jimmy stabs Chopper.
Yeah.
And he can't tell that he's being stabbed. He's like, what are you doing, mate? You know? And then he looks down, he's just bleeding. And Blue in the back, he's really dumb, really cowardly. So he's just kind of crying and like, oh God.
He's like, I'm proud of you for finally stepping up, Jimmy. Blue, you're fucking bloody useless.
Yeah.
But this whole scene, it's very memorable because yeah, like
he keeps stabbing me like that, I'm gonna like die.
6 or 7 or 8 times, you know, yeah. And he just is just kind of doesn't react to anything. So you're just kind of like, is this guy like super high or does he have a high threshold for pain? As someone who's not familiar with his story, I was just kind of like, why is he not reacting? And the way that they all sort of, the three of them sort of talk it out amongst each other. Like at one point, Jimmy's like, all right, dude, I just stabbed you like 8 times. You got to sit down. Like, are you okay? Like you're bleeding out. Just have a seat. Like,
well, you find out later that the reason that Chopper is in prison is because he kidnapped a judge to try to break Jimmy out of prison.
Yeah.
So in a way he's like, and again, I hate to keep bringing up my dad, but it was just, and I don't want to make it sound like I was like from the worst family ever. Like, but like my dad was like that. He was like fiercely loyal, but really unpredictable. And, you know, especially at the end of this movie was the saddest part about how it related to my dad. But, he was like a really good friend in many ways, but also just like not the kind of guy you want to be friends with.
Well, because Jimmy even says like he's so close to getting out. He's going to go have like some sort of parole board. He's very close to getting out of prison and he doesn't want this huge, elaborate let's paralyze everybody in the prison wing
for obvious reasons.
Like, you understand why he's like, okay, I got to cut ties with this dude because he's going to drag me down into a situation I don't want to be in.
Yeah. And you can't just say, hey, I don't want to be your friend anymore, because then he might stab him in the fucking eye.
He might take over the prison and paralyze
him. Yeah. Right. Right.
But the friendship, the relationship between Chopper and all of these ex-gang members or criminal members that he has interactions with is like the most fascinating part of the movie, because at certain points you should be like, dude, why are you even talking to this guy? Fucking run. They're all like, oh, no, it's under the water under the bridge, Mike. Come on, let's go have a drink. It's fascinating to me.
No, it is. It's definitely, I think fascinating is the best word for it. This episode of Streaming Things is sponsored by BetterHelp. What's the first thing you'd do if you had an extra hour in your day?
Sleep.
You would sleep more.
More, yeah.
Okay, sleep that's more. Fair. Some people might go for a run, read an extra book. A lot of us spend our whole lives wishing we had more time. The question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. That's what therapy can do. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so that you can do more of it. You can learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. You can get empowered to be the best version of yourself.
You can also nap.
You can also just nap. So if you're thinking about starting therapy, if you've never tried it, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/streamingthings today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Streaming Things.
April is here, the tomb is empty, and it's time to give a special thanks to all of our patrons who keep the lights on at Streaming Things. And I want to give a special shout out to our super patrons for the month of April. Thank you so much to Stanton Valentino, Mattelstat, Bryce Coppin, Susie Callahan, Anthony Corona, Sunshine, Huckleberry Cauliflower, Ashley Hazen, Mike from New Hampshire, Brett X, Emily Scarano, Lil Tickler, Svento7, Jay Scramo, Bluff Pum, a.k.a. Ashley Ray, Adam Busby, Wendy O'Loughlin, Jason Hawkins, Conrad, Kaylee Sampson, Rabbit Dog in a Barbie Car, Charlie Friday, Alexis Adler, Peaches, Emmy, Haley B., Joe Velez, John Collins, Amanda King, Trisha Bueller, Sun Loving Mortal, Suzanne Rode, Jen Robinson, Kalisha Reeves, Aaron Armstrong, Kevin Strother, Ashley Powers, Stephen the Fifth, Casey McCain, and Enza. Thank you all so much from the bottom of our hearts. And with that, let's get back to the episode.
The next scene really stood out to me. The cops are talking to him when he's in the hospital, trying to get him to make a statement on Jimmy. He's like, no, no, you know, it's like if your mom stabbed you, you know, you wouldn't call the police. You'd be like, hey, yeah, my mom why'd you stab me? Yeah. And I love his explanation of that because it's like the world that he comes from. And again, I do have some experience with this, like the underbelly and the way that they think. And this next scene, you know, or the next line where he's like, well, Jimmy made a statement on you, and he can see Chopper's face. He can't comprehend it. And it's true. That is the way, like talking to the police, telling on you, you know, that's like the worst. That's way worse than shooting me in the face. That's just like unforgivable.
He could forgive Jimmy for stabbing.
The stabbing, honestly, he understood.
Yeah, he's like, I get it.
But like, what do you mean he made a statement on me? No, he didn't, you know.
And they're doing a
process it.
They're doing a victims of crime compensation board where he can make money off of this.
And then he's like, ah, oh, that snaky boss.
Cheeky dog. Can I make a claim against him?
Trying to, now he's like, ah, oh, money. I'm starting to kind of understand it. He's always been a junkie, right?
And just saying, I've been getting really into Bluey recently.
Like, why wouldn't you?
I watch it. It's a fucking wonderful show, a delightful show. So watching an Australian film
that way different than Bluey.
That features a character named Bluey was really fun to me.
Well, his name's Blue, right? Or is it Bluey?
Well, his name's Blue, but they call him Bluey.
Oh, that's right.
That's just like, Bluey, you're fucking useless. So now next time I boot up the kids show Bluey.
Bluey's New Zealand, right?
I think so.
But I mean, it's right there.
Yeah. I mean, not to offend the two countries. I'm offending both countries by saying, potato, potato.
Well, it's like us in Canada, maybe, you know, pretty much.
We love
they got some French people. Other than that, it's the same.
They're fine.
Eh?
Eh?
Any hoozle. We get the scene where he's talking to Jimmy from cell to cell. They're just kind of cussing each other out. And then everybody else is kind of chiming in. Fuck you. You know, it's fun. It's fun times. And then we get the court scene, and I love that. Well, Jimmy's defending himself. He's like prosecuting. I think he's defending himself, and the plaintiff is Chopper. I think. But anyway,
yeah.
When it culminates in the fact that Chopper lent him the suit that he's wearing,
yeah,
because he didn't want him to look like a jackass in court. God, it's so fucking fascinating. Like,
I didn't want you to have to arrest him for having bad fashion.
Yeah, he's making everybody laugh, and Jimmy hates this, right? And this is where we find out that he tried to free him from jail. I just thought that was such an interesting way to like keep this going. Like, come on, mate, I know you're trying to, you know, get me put away for the rest of my life, but you can't dress like that, you know? it's so fascinating.
But he realizes that his days are numbered in this prison because he's made so many enemies.
After trolling Jimmy for having a tiny picture in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Where's your picture out there, Jimmy?
Well, we got a small one down here.
That's all he's got is to like be known, you know? And that's the case with a lot of criminals is like you don't even mind. They don't even mind going to jail at a certain point. Some of them, it's just about their whole life becomes consumed by how people perceive them because it's often a safety issue and reputation and it's really everything to them, you know, mm-hmm. At least from my experience talking to family. but yes, he realizes that he's going to die and everybody in there wants him dead. And he's got this price on his head from the dockies. And
I love how he goes to, cause I guess he has a really good relationship with, I don't know if he's the warden or like the head of the guards, Mr. Beasley.
Is it Broadbent out of the question?
Yeah, yeah. How about a bribe? He's like, are you joking? No, I'm dead serious. If I do the compensation thing, I got some money.
Yeah, I got $5,000. Yeah,
he wants to be transferred out of the prison, but they're like, there's nothing we can do, man.
They don't care about him at all.
Yeah.
They know that he's in danger.
Like, you shouldn't have been an asshole.
They won't even transfer him out of the H wing of this particular prison. So he gets a dude to cut both his ears off. And then I told you I'd get out of H division. They're like, get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Cause they know he's not, well, he is crazy, but not in the crazy that he's making it look.
Yeah. Cause he wants to get a mental check, right? That's how he gets transferred out.
Yep. And then it fast forwards
and
to
the whole time that dude's cutting his ears off. A, he's like giving the guy shit, like, just don't sold it. Yank it off, you pansy. Yeah. but then like Jimmy and Bluey and all the other dudes are watching the in window. Like, dude, you're going to have to run that after cold water.
Yeah.
You're going to get infected, dude. They're like, even though there's so much animosity, they're still like, oh, dude, you're going to hurt yourself. Don't do that.
Yeah. It's fucking fast. It is like, I can't stop saying fascinating, but it is wild. And then it fast forwards to almost 10 years later. It's like 1986. Mm-hmm. And now he's out. He's with his lady friend. She's shooting him up, you know, doing what you do. He comes home to dad. And
does she have a name?
She does. I wrote it down.
For a good part of the movie, whenever she would talk, the captions would just say girlfriend.
I think it's Alana or Tanya, maybe. I think
Tanya. Yeah. Because they finally say her name with the scene with her mom.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for a while, it was just girlfriend in the captions.
Yeah. They don't give her much to do. So that's understandable.
Yeah.
But he comes home to his dad and he's got this like sad welcome home mark sign up and he went to bang and shoot up first. And then you find out his dad sucks and you're like, oh, I get it. Why you didn't go there first?
Like a shit.
Yeah.
They make them for men.
And you can see how hurt Chopper is, you know? But I did love, it threw me for a loop. He's like,
mom wrote me a letter. And he's like, oh, did she tell you where she's at? And then they both just like die laughing. It's like, no.
Of course she wouldn't.
I don't know. It's so wild and sad. He doesn't seem to like the guys calling him Chopper, by the way. But then we get the whole bit with Neville Bartos.
Well, yeah, the guys don't, he doesn't like them calling him Chopper because they're bringing attention on him and he's paranoid. Like, you're going to get me killed. Like, people know I'm around here. Quit making it a big deal.
They'll never know that the
Bojangles.
Mr. Bojangles. They'll never know that the giant guy with no ears is me.
Right.
If you don't call me Chopper, dude.
I can blend in, guys.
God damn.
I
look at my ears.
Well, no, because I was laughing every, so the bar that they keep going to, the seedy, like, Bojangles. Australian bar is called Bojangles, and I just think of the fast food restaurant. So every time, like, oh man, they're gonna plug you at Bojangles. It made me laugh every time.
They're gonna get you at Applebee's, dude.
I just want some chicken, and some guy came over and plugged me.
I was trying to get the Jack Daniels chicken. and apparently, we didn't see this, but he had shot him in the leg. And now he can't, you know, he's
Neville. Yeah.
Neville.
Neville was the dude in the very beginning when he was watching the news. There was a guy on the news station, like, he's crazy. He's bloody crazy. That's Neville.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he shot him in the leg. He just wanted to confront him at Bojangles and show him how successful he is now. He doesn't actually want to like enact any revenge on Chopper, but Chopper just can't let it go. Like, he can't rest knowing that this guy might, like, how could he not want revenge? He wants to process.
You know? Look at it. He's making a game of his limping. He's trying to make me feel
bad. Look at him, man. I'm going to go nip this in the bud, you know? And on the way, one of the guys that hangs out with Neville, like, seemingly flirts with Tanya. All he did was get a light, right? But
that was Sammy, right? Sammy the Turk?
Was it Sammy?
I think it's Sammy the Turk.
Who, by the way, is a prostitute, but that's different. You know, there's a scene later that I think is...
Tanya?
Yes.
Oh, I thought you were telling me that Sammy the Turk was a prostitute. I'm like, fuck, hell yeah.
Maybe that's where he gets all his money to. I don't know. But Chopper can't let it go, ends up firing his pistol at this bar. And that's what he does. He can't have fun. He can't relax. He ruins everything.
Everyone knows a guy that just, his role at parties is to ruin the party.
And he's talking to Tanya in the next scene in his car, in her car, I think. And
it's ours.
I'm sorry, Bubby. And then he's so mad. Like, wait a second. Who are you fucking? And she goes, everyone.
I work in a brothel.
He's like, no. You know what I mean. Who are you kissing?
I'm kissing you. Get that mouth away from me. It's kiss the wog's cock.
So she gets mad, goes to her mom's house, won't let him in. He's
the most toxic dude.
Ends up busting in the house, like headbutting her mom, punching her multiple times.
Yeah, this scene's hard, like pretty hard to watch, honestly. Because up to this point, you're just kind of like, oh, what a rascal.
There's something different and silly about stabbing a guy in the face and then like headbutting a mother, you know, for sure.
Yeah. And this is the one where you're like, okay, get him away from everybody, please.
And then it jumps right to like dinner with Mr. Downey. And I don't understand what's going on, but I guess he was like kind of was working as a mole for the cops,
yeah.
But also was like completely delusional about like thinking he was a Batman, basically. Like, I'm fighting the crime for you. And they're like, no, you're not. I cannot be clear enough.
We just want you to tell us when some shit's happening.
Wank, wank. I get it. I don't think you do. Which, shame on them, because he clearly isn't mentally
right
there enough to be doing this job. He goes to Neville's house. Jesus Christ is my next note. Because like, this guy is just like, it's so cringe is what the kids would say, you know, watching him just like burn his own life down constantly.
Yeah. But also an indictment against Neville is like, why the fuck would you keep entertaining this dude?
Come on in, Chopper.
Oh, I know you just shot up
the
bar.
He wants to show off his pool and
dude,
stuff.
You shot up Bojangles. Come on in and check out my pool. And I give cocaine to my dogs. And I put kill names on their bowls. So if a thief breaks in and goes, hey, Spot, that's the dog's kill order. So it's like, oh, it's fucking mental, mate.
Yeah, it's a good plan. He tells his, I did laugh when he tells his flunkies, stop following me. I'm good. You know, you guys are always up my fucking ass. Jeez. And then you hear Chopper mutter, that explains the limp. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't catch that.
I laughed really hard. That explains the limp.
This movie actually does a couple interesting film techniques that I really appreciated. And the cocaine, snorting cocaine scene is filmed really interestingly, where it's almost like they performed the scene like themselves in slow motion, but then sped it up and then ADR'd their actual voice, because they're like, the frame rate and the movements are very jittery and not realistic. But I think that really sells the activity of snorting cocaine really well. Mm-hmm. It was just an interesting filming style that I appreciated.
Yeah, this whole scene is very gross and upsetting, just like the way that everybody lives. This whole movie is that way.
Yeah.
Kind of like an early Danny Boyle Trainspotting kind of way too, you know? But the whole bit where he's robbing him, and not basically, he's robbing him, but he's like, you're being very rude, you know?
Come off it, mate. This fucking guy.
I'm just kidding. But seriously, I want money right now, or I'll shoot you.
I'll give you 20 seconds between the time it takes you to get from that chair to that door to produce some cash. And then his buddy Robbo is like, what is this fucking guy, Robin Rose? That's very, you're being very rude.
Yeah. And then he shoots him in his liver or whatever. Sorry, Casey. On that side of his fucking body somewhere. Stomach, I think. It's his left side. I think that is his stomach.
You want to take him to the hospital?
And then he does.
And then like Robbo and like the flunkies that are with Neville are like, Chopper, this isn't how you treat your friends, mate.
It's not. I'm very disappointed in you. And he was like ashamed that he took him to the hospital, even though he really did.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, oh, I'd never do that. What the hell?
Why would I take him to the hospital? Defeats the bloody purpose of shooting him. But he totally took him to the hospital.
Definitely did.
And then he sees fucking gollywog.
Tanya walks in with her new boyfriend or whatever. And he just like lets his huge hog hang out while he's talking to the cop.
Dude, you know.
You were happy.
I was so happy.
See that dick.
Let me see that dick. And boy, howdy, do we get a dick.
It was a hanger, too.
And it's hilarious, too, because it's clearly a prosthetic dick.
But why'd they make the prosthetic so honky?
It's so huge. This thing is comically large. But I love the fact that he's like got it out so that she and her date can see it across the bar. But the two dudes he's talking with can't see it.
Right.
But then halfway through the scene, the one guy finally catches like, oh, put that thing away.
You want to see it?
No.
You know, every now and then you just got to let it hang, Steve.
I get it. What's his name? Mr. Downey.
And all of these scenes, by the way, the filmmaking of this, it should be pointed out. We've only said like, two or three paragraphs of my notes, but they really let each scene kind of go on, and there's a lot of yapping and banter that goes from discomfort to humor, because it's still going on, back to discomfort, you know, and sometimes it oscillates back and forth multiple times in one scene. Like really, Andrew Dominik really just lets each scene kind of sit. It's a very like 70s film style, New Hollywood style kind of thing.
Agreed. But Mr. Downey kind of told him like, hey, man, quit telling people that you work for the cops. You don't work for us. B, we're getting intel that the mafia is going to put a hit out on you. And your old buddy, Jimmy Laughlin, is supposedly the one they're hiring to do it.
Mm-hmm. So he goes straight to Jimmy's house. And again, he's got that 8-month-old pregnant girlfriend and at least one kid, but I think multiple already. They're just kids. They'd be afraid of seeing a man with no ears. He makes him give up his guns, but he brought decoy guns. He's got his other pistol tucked in his waistband. He brought a lot of decoy guns.
What? You know that's happening. Come on. You know he's like, they do not do a good job of double checking. Like, all right, we got all those.
I mean,
right?
He got a lot of guns. He might be thinking like, who the fuck would have a fourth one? You know,
I love that his pregnant strung out wife is just like,
it's a really nice shotgun.
This is a nice shotgun. I think I'm going to keep this one.
Yeah, that's just how they live, man.
8 months pregnant. That bun's almost cooked.
Yep.
And yeah, again, the way you're talking about how the scenes go from funny and charming to like horrifying and then back to funny and charming and then back to horrifying. This scene is like the perfect encapsulation of that. Cause like the way he kind of walks in and chums with his wife and Jimmy about the gun and everything. And then he sits down and then the kid comes in and he's been like, hello, you got a little mouth on you. And just the way he's talking to the kid is very unnerving, even though he's not threatening the kid. He's just being a weird dude.
Yeah, it's wild.
And then obviously the scene plays out where he pulls his gun on everybody. But I mean, it's so uncomfortable.
It's weird how this plays out, because my understanding is that Sammy the Turk had nothing to do with any of this.
Well, he was supposed to lure him out so that they could kill him, but he went to the wrong car park.
Is that what happened? See, I didn't understand this.
No, there's a point where he mentions that Bojangles has two parking lots.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he was supposed to go out the one door where they were waiting for him and they would pounce on him and kill him, but he went out the wrong exit and he was by himself. And so that altercation happened.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I remember he confronts Jimmy. Jimmy denies everything, eventually believes him and gives him a bunch of money with which he's going to buy drugs.
That's not for drugs.
Yeah. But it definitely is for drugs. And then Jim calls Neville, we assume, or not assume, we know. And then we cuts to the Bojangles with the Sammy the Turk incident. And I did see, like, you know, the girlfriend outside and Jimmy outside and by the car looking, but I was so confused, but now I get it. And that's why you mentioned the two parking lots.
Yeah. In the moment you're not, I think you're supposed to be confused, but then later on when they kind of show the whole trial and they kind of have everyone talking to the camera, they make it to where
he is actually acquitted of that murder.
Yeah.
But is convicted of shooting Neville in the stomach finally, I think.
Yeah.
And all kinds of other things. That's interesting. And I love, no offense to you guys, but because I watched the Anatomy of a Fall, one of the best movies of the last few years, but definitely of last year. But the whole movie is based around a French trial and they still wear like the wigs and stuff, mm-hmm. which I find fascinating. And they do that here in Australia as well.
Yes.
I don't know how you can take yourself seriously. Is what I mean, you know?
And the robes and the old, like colonial powdered wigs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Arizona.
This is how we talk in Tucson, Arizona.
But the cops don't believe his confession. There's that whole bit before he goes to trial.
I love how he's like, I've never been more insulted in my life. Yeah. I'm confessing to a murder and you don't believe me.
He wants to be a tough guy. He wants the reputation. That's all he has in life. You know, he's.
Yeah. And there's this really small moment where he returns to his dad's place and his dad's watching the news report about how a guy was shot at Bojangles. And he's like, I thought it was you. And I was really, really worried. He's like, nah, it's not me. And he asks him like, did you do that? And he goes, nah, of course not. But then his dad doesn't believe him at all. And he goes, my boy, just like, yeah, you fucking did. Yeah. So cool.
So proud of you. Hey, at the end of the movie, after all of this is him finishing the TV interview in prison again. So we get to see what it was he was watching at the beginning, but also the rest of him watching it. And he's with two prison guards in there like, oh, you're wild. You did a good job, Chopper. But now we got to get back to work now. And he's like, you got plenty of ciggies. Oh yeah. I got a whole stack of them. And the last shot of the movie is just him. It's kind of like the end of The Irishman in a way, but it's just him lonely. He's just lonely.
Yeah. He's been doing all these things to get these like short term adrenaline hits of attention from people. But it's, you know, the in between is him literally being alone and suffering the consequences of his actions.
Yep.
There's a couple interesting things that happened. I really liked the movie dips into this weird, rhymey sequence with the trial where like everyone's looking like, ah, and I meant to go back and write down what they all said, but they're all like doing this like children's poem rhyme about what happened in the trial. And it's just an interesting thing to introduce into the movie this late into the movie, but I did appreciate it. It was like interesting and new and a different style. Maybe it's
an allusion to how he wrote his children's books.
Possibly. Yeah.
Hooky the Cripple.
And like you said, he beat the murder rat for that, but, I do like that final bit where he's being interviewed with by the journalist and he's just talking like, you know, people, I'm doing my part for the tourism board of Australia because people go to that Bojangles and recreate the gunfight. And he's like, I've killed like 13 or 14 people, but this is the most non-murder of all murders. And this is the one that I'm famous for.
Yeah.
Which is just what a weird thing to think about. And he's got a little groupie in prison named Bucky. It's like, come here, Bucky, get the fuck off. This is my camera.
Yeah, but it's like this charming kind of self-obsession, but also like he loves that he's admired by this younger guy.
Yeah.
And then it culminates in his loneliness in the cell. I just thought, talking about it with you, I really want to watch it again. I mean, it's really fascinating. Reminds me a lot, and there's a lot of differences, but of the movie Bronson, an early film with Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Wild stuff.
Yeah, this is... I did not have any expectations going in. I knew nothing about it, but when the movie ended, I immediately was like, let me pull up Mark Brandon Reed. An interesting, fascinating.
He looked individual. A lot like him. Like Eric Bana got all doughy and stuff kind of like that in the handlebar mustache. And
yeah, apparently, Mark Brandon Reed was a huge fan of Eric Bana from, the show Full Frontal, which was a sketch comedy show in the 90s in Australia. Mm-hmm. And I guess there was a lot of larger names that were in circulation to possibly play him in this movie, like Kurt Russell and a couple other larger Australian actors at the time. But I guess he just liked Eric Bana a lot. And he was like, I think that guy could play me in a movie. And
how amazing is it? How much do you think Mark Brandon Reed loved watching this movie?
So I did a little deep diving, and apparently this movie scared him in a way, because he was like super excited that they're making a movie.
Yeah. It seems he'd be the type that would love that.
You could see like, there's a bit where like, Andrew Dominik and Eric Bana went to his house and spent like a weekend with him so that they could sort of know him better. And there's a clip you can find where Andrew Dominik tells him like, oh, this movie's not coming out until the year 2000. And he's like, yeah, 2000? That long? Oh, mate, you got to make that quick. I want to see this movie about me. He's like super into it.
Yeah.
But apparently he didn't want to go see it in theaters. And so they sent him a VHS of it so he can watch it by himself at his house. And he called Andrew Dominik. And I guess the movie, he was a little taken aback by how crazy he was portrayed in this movie. And he like called Andrew Dominik. He's like, is this what people feel like around me? Like, it made him super self-conscious, which tracks with what this story's telling. Like, apparently he like didn't know how to feel about it for the longest time. And there are interviews you can find of him saying like, oh, they did a great job. And there's some interviews where he's like, I think they went a little too far with,
I'm a nice guy.
I'm a nice bloke. I just like a little bit of torture.
That makes me look a little unhinged, you know?
Yeah.
Makes you look a little unpredictable.
Is this how people think of me? Am I the baddie?
You cut a couple people's toes off and randomly stab people, and all of a sudden you're considered stressful to be around?
What? Yeah. And this movie went on to be it was the highest grossing rated R movie in Australian history up until 2013, when The Wolf of Wall Street came out.
Really?
Yeah.
Very successful
In Australia. Yeah. They love a Mark Brandon Reed.
They do.
Down under.
You know, Chopper, he's like all of us. Till the Hemsworth went and mucked it up.
He's a real dog of a bloke.
Or whatever. Sorry, guys. Now he's coming. But yeah, thank you, Bryce, for recommending Chopper. It was just really not on my radar, but crime thrillers are like my favorite movies ever. So you would have thought that I would have seen it, or at least knew about it by now. So much appreciated. Especially talking about it with you, Steve, I got a much bigger and better appreciation for Chopper from 2000. And yeah. Excited to see the next prison movie that I haven't seen yet. Damien Chazelle's making one. That should be neat. Yeah.
I like Damien.
Yeah. Good friend of ours.
Yeah. Good guy. I got him on D-Dog. D-Dog. Love what's up? La La Land, my guy. So some fun stuff happening in the future. This movie was chosen by Bryce Coppin. Mm-hmm. Just full disclosure, we are ending the Chosen Film series shortly. That's why if some of you have gone to our Patreon to sign up at the appropriate tier to dictate a movie that we watch, we have locked that tier out. We're not going to do any more after we only have a couple more weeks of Chosen Films. We got Amadeus and Hidalgo next week. And then the week after that, we have When Harry Met Sally. And then we're going to end on Attack the Block. That's going to be the very last Chosen Film we do on the main feed, because we are going to be revamping our Patreon tiers starting in June.
There will be a version of that coming out.
So. Yeah, there's going to be a version of Chosen Films, but the Chosen Films are going to live on Patreon only, and they're not going to be main feed episodes. Just because the main feed episode we're using as ways to get people to be introduced to streaming things and become fans, and then they would go to Patreon to get the extra stuff like this. And unfortunately, what we find is some of these movies sort of, the way we release episodes, I think, is sort of hindering the show's ability to grow. So that's why we're pulling them off of the main feed and sticking them on Patreon only. But we just wanted to be super, super clear and transparent with you guys. Stay tuned for some more in-depth information as to what the Patreon tiers are going to be. We're really excited to share those with you.
Yeah, I think we got some really good stuff focusing on the kinds of things that we do best. Sorry, I looked up and I look so pale. I know I'm really tired, but I was like, even for me, I was like, I don't think I look very healthy or good.
I think you look great.
I think I look like RoboCop when he takes his mask off.
Murphy.
But thank you guys for tuning in. That was Streaming Things, Streaming Chopper. That's all the time we have for right now. We've got to go return some videotapes. My name is Kit.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things. Happy streaming.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.